Podtacular, episode 315, Flood, for October 4th, 2012. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Dust Storm.
And I am your other host, Brent Gamer.
And tonight we talk about more Halo 4 information as we are counting down the days. And as of this recording, there are 33 days left until Halo 4 gets released. What do you think about that, Brent? You excited?
Yes, I am hyped. I am ready to go. I'm ready to play some Halo 4.
I think if you're not hyped at this by this point, you are... There's no hope for you.
Yeah, just cancel your pre-order. Well, there is hope if you're really, really into TV commercials or live action, like, miniseries.
Yes, but still, we're almost a month away from release. And at this point, we've seen just about everything that you would want to see for multiplayer. And they haven't... They've done us the grace of not revealing too much for the campaign in Spartan Ops, which is a good thing. They haven't spoiled any of the storyline for that, which people are really happy about. So we've gotten pretty much the right dose of information. And I think at this point, you've made a decision whether or not you're going to be excited for Halo or you're not.
Yeah. If you're not excited at this point, but you had pre-ordered, just go cancel your pre-order right now.
Yeah, because this game is it. This is going to be the holiday title.
Yes, it's in the can. It's finished. They partied.
Mm-hmm. Call of Duty has nothing on Halo 4 right now.
No.
Nothing. Assassin's Creed, maybe, but that's a different genre, so we won't discuss that here. But Halo 4 is where it's going to be. I guarantee it.
Mm-hmm.
We got all the Halo 3 people that wanted to stick to that kind of play style. We have all the Halo Reach people that are kind of following in line with the next game, and we have the DMR, we have the BR. Everything's just falling in line for this game. So, if you're listening to this, it's time to get hyped, people, because it's coming down the pipe, and it's coming down the pipe fast.
Yes, it's coming down your internet tubes very soon.
Speaking about pipes and maybe cables, per se, we had a Sparkcast released last week that we actually did not get a chance to talk about, which we want to kind of cover today. I jotted down some notes of things that I picked out. I'm sure you have some stuff you picked out as well, Brent.
Yeah.
So, yes. First things first, let's get down to the map list. And we'll get into more details about this later in the show. But we have all the maps that are going to be released on game day. All 9 maps have been revealed, and I'm going to go list them in order of how they were revealed. First one is Haven, then Adrift, Longbow, Exile, Solace, Ragnarok, Complex. Well, it kind of depends on those two, but those two are there. Abandon and Meltdown. So those are the 9 maps that you're going to get day one when Halo 4 comes out. Those are all good maps that are going to be shipped on disc.
Yes, and we know for sure there's going to be 3 additional map packs released with 3 maps each.
Right.
That you'll receive for free. Well, not for free because you're paying extra for it, but you'll receive them with a special coupon if you get the limited edition Halo 4.
Correct.
So
that's another reason, and pre-orders are going through pretty quickly. I think Amazon is one of the last places if they still have some available where you can get some.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking to get the limited edition, you need to pick those up fast because they were serious about making a limited amount of limited edition copies.
Yes, limited. Go ahead.
It's not like the Halo Reach Limited where they had a bunch of them, because I have 3 sitting in my apartment right now.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, every time in the past that any game has come out with a limited edition, I always find it, you know, go on sale for like 75% off 2 years later. At like retailers, they're just like, we need to get rid of this huge box.
Right.
It's taking up space on our shelves. Have it for like $25. Just take it.
Yep.
That happened with the Halo 3 Legendary Edition real bad. Because those boxes were huge.
Well, and I actually ended up buying one of them because I have one. actually bought one 3 months ago, 4 months ago, because I'm kind of building out my Halo collection.
Right.
So, yeah, they're not that awesome. Hard to come by, actually.
Yeah. Not really very limited.
Nah,
but this one is really. Limited.
This one is quite limited. I may actually go out and buy another copy because I have a pre-order with GameStop, and I might go ahead and pre-order with Amazon.
Yeah.
So we'll see. See what happens. Maybe give it away in the contest. Don't know yet. It's possible. We'll have to see what happens.
It'll have to be a really, really interesting contest.
Yeah.
Like, is it going to be, like, submission-based or just a random drawing?
I don't know yet. I don't know how we're going to do that quite yet.
I like the submission-based contests best.
We'll see. We will see what happens. In addition to the 3 map packs that you mentioned, we also know we're getting 3 different Forge-type maps. So we saw a preview of one of the ones at RTX, which is pretty much the Forerunner style, similar how to we had in Halo Reach. But there's also 2 other Forge World type maps that 343 hasn't talked about yet. 2 others. Did I say 2 others? Yeah, 2 others.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have those that we haven't seen yet either.
Hmm.
I know, right? It's exciting. It's really exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. But
if you're not hyped, man, you're missing out.
A lot of speculation, like what are the other 2 Forge environments going to be? What's it going to be like?
My guess is some kind of human environment similar to like how Turf and District from Halo 2 were, and then some kind of Covenant-like environment. That would be my guess.
Yeah. I don't know what I want out of Forge environments, really. Just variety, I guess. One of a lot of variety.
Yeah.
A lot of
well, I mean,
ambient
lighting. You get the variety with the human and the Covenant environments for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, I think of the Covenant architecture would be somewhat like Heretic Midship and Corvette, and then the human ones would be similar to Turf, District, what were some of the other human level ones? I think there weren't too many other ones, actually.
Terminal?
Yeah. Alright. So, kind of those different architecture sets, I would imagine, right, would be forgeable environment type things.
I should be able to forge a terminal train into any map I want to.
That
regardless
would be,
of size.
That, that would be interesting. They tried to do it with a kill ball on Halo Reach. You've played that custom. Yeah, you've done it with us before. I think we actually had a Podtacular night where we had some Podtacular forum members go on and play Halo Reach like a year or a year and a half back or so. That was a long time ago. I remember the nights when we were doing the Halo 2 farewell games. Remember for like those last 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just trying to enjoy it while we still could.
Mm-hmm. There's some videos up on my personal YouTube channel, actually. So if you guys are interested in if you have not played Halo 2 and you want to see how it was like, you can go watch some of those if you want. There's plenty of other videos as well, but just to kind of see the difference in how Halo has evolved since pretty much when Live started.
Well, Halo 3 just looks like Halo 2. Halo Reach just looks like Halo 3. Halo 4 just looks like Halo Reach. So,
well,
therefore, Halo Reach looks like Halo 2.
Are you talking about just in general scheme of graphics, or are you talking about...
Yeah, I was being sarcastic. That's the old joke,
Okay.
Halo 3 just looked like Halo 2, and then Halo Reach just looked like Halo 3.
Because I disagree, for the most part.
Yeah, you can obviously see the difference between Halo 4 and Halo 2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, you're going from from a standard definition game to a high definition game. Of course there's going to be differences.
Yes.
And the graphics upgrades you just get from game to game is crazy. They're really having to stress the architecture on the Xbox, I would imagine. Because mm-hmm. Bungie said they really pushed it to the max with Halo Reach, and now we look at Halo 4 and the presentation at E3 for the campaign. Oh my goodness.
Think if they could put this on a Wii U.
Well, they did say the Wii U had pretty much equivalent standards to the current generation console, so...
I always wondered what it would be like if Nintendo decided to just merge with Xbox Division as part of, like, some sort of massive gaming giant that would just devour Sony whole.
Gaming conglomerate that is Microsoft.
Yes. I don't think Nintendo would get bought out by Microsoft.
No.
No, they wouldn't do it. They're making too much money anyway.
Because back in the day, it was what? It was Sega, Nintendo, and what was the other game producer? Or, you know what I mean?
For a while, it was just really Sega and Nintendo. Atari was in the game for a while.
Atari, yeah, okay.
They had the Atari 5200, but that wasn't
really... wherever they are today, if those three joined up... I mean, Sega almost kind of has joined up with Nintendo with that regard, though. Yeah,
they did. I mean, it would not surprise me as just like the final... Not a nail in the coffin, but just like the final slap in that 1990s war between Nintendo and Sega. Sega just gets bought out by Nintendo. Like, they just come out and announce it one day. Sega is now a division of Nintendo!
Yeah.
That would make me happy, actually, because then Sega might be able to finance good games.
Or Nintendo? Just Nintendo? I mean...
But no, Sega.
Nintendo's just...
Right now, Sega can't, like, finance any games at all. Well, right. Sega makes good games.
Well, but Nintendo's complacent.
The games they develop are good.
That's the problem with Nintendo, though, is they're complacent. They stick with what they know, and there's not really much innovation in terms of premier games on the platform for Nintendo. It's you have your Mario, you have your Zelda, and everything in between that's Nintendo specific, and there's really no growth from there, which is all right. I mean, they're established franchises.
As far as the hardware goes, they try to be innovative. And to be honest,
but
the Wii U tablet is much cooler as far as the applications that you could make for it than the Wiimote ever was.
Well, so here's how I view Nintendo. They are really good at innovating kind of the hardware aspect because they were the first one to really kind of start do the whole motion controlling thing.
Yeah.
With the Wii controllers. And then Microsoft and Sony picked up on their ends with the Kinect and the Move. I mean, Nintendo was the first console maker to come up with that technology.
The Kinect is only a marginal success, even though you could make the argument that the technology is better than the Wiimote stuff.
Well,
I mean, the Wiimote
is more accurate,
but there's more tech going on with the Kinect.
Yeah, and the Kinect does the full body tracking as well compared to just the Wii controllers for the Wii.
Yeah, but the body tracking isn't necessarily fantastic, whereas with the Wiimote, you do get a good level of precision with the Wiimote Plus, whatever they're calling that, Wii Motion Plus.
Right.
But this isn't the Nintendo podcast. This is the Halo 4 podcast.
This is true. This is true. So, okay.
That was my fault for getting us off track.
No, I mean, it's
a fun little tangent.
But it's a conversation that a lot of people have, and I don't think... I mean, this is a gaming podcast, more specifically a Halo podcast, so it's okay if we deter from to gaming stuff every now and then.
It just feels like, to me, the Xbox franchises fit more thematically with Nintendo's franchises than Sony's. Because, like, Sony's big franchises are, like, kind of based in reality, kind of darker than the Xbox stuff. Like, even Halo, you know, it doesn't take itself way seriously. It's got a light tone to it, in a way.
Right.
Especially, like, the early Halo games.
But the thing is, on PlayStation and Microsoft, you see these innovative titles. You see stuff like Homefront on the Xbox. You see stuff like Uncharted on the PlayStation. You see stuff like Borderlands.
Yeah,
I mean,
to be honest.
Those are new innovative titles that have come out within the last 3 to 5 years. Where with Nintendo, there really hasn't been anything that's been developed specifically on the platform.
But I'm saying Borderlands was a third-party developed game. That wasn't Microsoft or Sony's
fault.
Okay,
bad example. So for Sony, you had Heavy Rain for the PlayStation. That was a unique title to PlayStation.
In the same breath, you can say that, I mean, Heavy Rain was just an extension of Indigo Prophecy. That wasn't a completely new concept.
But you get my point.
Well, I'm saying that Super Mario Galaxy, which came out on the Wii, was a completely different experience than Super Mario 64. Or Super Mario Sunshine, which most people don't like. It was okay, in my opinion.
But for most people, there was a direct connection to it.
I mean, there was a direct connection, but only with the character. As far as the gameplay went, Super Mario Galaxy was completely different than its 3D predecessors. There was a lot of innovation in that game. It All used right. the same gameplay themes, as in you're still jumping around, you're still Mario, but it played with the idea of spherical gravity and things like that in an interesting way.
Yeah, but...
that the series hadn't explored before.
Okay.
But and that
still,
was Nintendo.
But you're still based in the series. You just said in the series.
Yeah, but I'm saying that on that same note, are you going to say that, you know, Halo 4 is just a... you know, not an innovative portion of the Halo franchise, even though we know
it is. It's innovative, but, I mean, it's still part of a franchise that is being developed on the same platform. But you still have these other games on Xbox that are kind of testing out new ways of doing things.
Yeah, but I'm saying that the reason for that is right now the Wii U, or not the Wii U, the Wii isn't as powerful as the Xbox or the PS3. It can't even output 720p. Can only do 480i.
But everyone who's
or 480,
already,
yeah, it can
but
do
everyone who's looking to doing the HD games have already invested in getting the development kits for the Xbox and the PlayStation. I mean, Nintendo is behind in that regard.
If I were Nintendo, I would definitely give my Wii U dev kits to developers at a drastically reduced rate just to be like, "Hey, you need to start making HD games on the Wii U, all right?"
Yeah.
And we've already seen that happen. Like, they've already announced
something that's not a first party title. Or something that is and is something completely new, not something based off established characters of a Nintendo world.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree that Nintendo needs to work on original characters and things.
Yeah.
Because that was think about all the great franchises that Nintendo has right now. Those were originally original franchises that they had to come up with. Those were
But they've been around for how long?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. At some point, Nintendo was a company that had to make those.
Right.
So I know that they have the intellectual talent for that. I just don't know if they have the desire to do that, because they've tried working so hard to move away from gamers and move towards this kind of casual set. I hate to use that word because it doesn't make any sense.
Well, yeah. It's a fine line how you define the casual.
But they even had like a new campaign out for the 3DS where this art lady, I guess she's an artist or something, but she's playing Art Academy on the 3DS. She's like, "I'm not a gamer and I use the 3DS. It's like, well, wow. Like,
okay. All right. Okay. Interesting. Well, let's end that conversation and get back to some Halo.
On that note, every time I use my pen in like a Starbucks or something, I'm going to be like, "I use a pen, but I'm not an artist."
Okay.
Like, I don't know. Just
to be random?
Yes.
All right. Fair enough. So on the Sparkcast, they talked about a lot of different things, some of which were the armor abilities, some of which they talked about the weapons, some of the vehicles, and all that nice kind of multiplayer related stuff. First, talking about the armor abilities, three of the ones that they really kind of focused in on was the thruster pack, and how it evolved from the beginning, which actually it used to be a Promethean teleporter. They looked at the idea of using kind of that teleportation system that you've seen the Promethean Knights use before,
yeah,
and kind of incorporating that into multiplayer. So that was actually kind of the first iteration of the thruster pack, and then they kind of found out that was a little too powerful, and they switched over to this thruster pack idea. And what we kind of have here is a matured, from the sounds of it, a heavily matured end result for the thruster pack that we will be getting on the drop of Halo 4. Mm-hmm. And if you've seen some of the gameplay video on YouTube, there's footage of it everywhere.
Kind of the evolution of Evade.
Yes.
Yes, that doesn't crunch down your hitbox.
Correct. So it's actually from the first video that we saw of it, it was pretty much a 2 or 3 second burst of you kind of traveling really fast. And it's kind of gone from that to a more instantaneous quick boost that you can jump about, 20, 30 feet in one direction, whichever direction you're holding your stick in.
Yes.
So, but yeah, it It doesn't change your hitbox area. You are still vulnerable. You can't shoot or anything. But it's kind of just one of those things where it's used to get out quick. So you can kind of duck behind a corner. And get out of friendly fire.
I really enjoyed evade and reach. Too much, almost. To the point
it was kind of a trade-off between that and sprint, because evade works, it seems to work a lot better for elites than it does Spartans.
Mm-hmm.
One, it looks more natural, and two, the evade just kind of feels weird.
Well, they even mentioned on the Spartcast that Bungie originally intended for evade to be a elite, exclusive armor ability. And, because it was so powerful that they had to incorporate it for Spartans.
Right.
For game types like Invasion, I guess.
Right. So that's kind of how that evolved. I see Thruster Pack is probably going to be used by people who are kind of specifically designed their gameplay for using that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There are definitely other armor abilities, I think, that will be kind of distributively used among the greater population. Although, I do think Thruster Pack will probably be one of the big favorites.
Actually, it'll be good for close quarters combat.
Yeah.
Like if you need to close the gap between you and somebody else, if you're using like a shotgun or the scatter gun or energy sword or...
Yeah, I just think Thruster Pack... Actually, I take that back. I think more people might actually use the Thruster Pack.
Well, I was a jetpack guy in Reach.
A lot of people were using the Promethean Vision at E3, and it was used less frequently at PAX. So we'll have to see kind of how that ends up dropping in the game. But I think Thruster Pack is going to be one of the popular ones. Next one that we had a discussion on was Hologram. And they kind of went into the history of the hologram, how they developed Hologram for Reach. And there's actually a bug with it, which I actually didn't know this existed. But apparently, sometimes the hologram will come up as the gray sphere that you normally see with a hologram, and sometimes it'll actually show up as an enemy, like a red dot on the radar. So apparently there's a bug in Halo Reach that does that, and I didn't even notice.
So sometimes it's useful and sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. And they fixed that in Halo 4 to where when you do look at a hologram, your reticle does turn red, and the dot on the radar is actually red as well. It's not gray. Because that was one of the things mm-hmm. I used the radar for advantage for. If I saw someone walking straight and I wasn't sure, I would check my radar real quick. And if it was gray, it's like, okay, don't need to worry about that guy.
Well, holograms also had like kind of jaunt to them. They kind of ran at a very consistent speed. And because they were going absolutely straight, you could tell
right.
if something was a hologram just by looking at it usually.
Right.
That's why nobody used it. In Halo Reach. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be honest, it was
Useful for some things.
But
it's for close quarters, kind of confusing people when you're doing stuff like capture the flag or assault, where if it looks like you have extra bodies going in, it's kind of as a distraction. It can be very useful.
But I'm saying those situations are very specific.
Yeah, and very few.
You know, generally, if I'm going to choose an armor ability, I'm going to choose one that I know is going to assist me in most roles that I'm going to be using. You know, so
right.
you know,
which for Halo Reach was generally sprint.
Yeah. Because you could just, you know, if you're getting pegged, you can run behind a rock or whatever, you know, it was the get out of the way button.
Right. Yeah. So hologram.
Yeah.
I don't see me using it that much. What about you? Yeah.
No.
Didn't think so. The other armor ability that they talked about was the Regen Field, which is pretty much the evolution of the Regenerator from Halo 3. One of the key differences, though, is that when you deploy it, it doesn't immediately start taking effect. So they said there was kind of like a 1 second delay, and if someone's actually shooting you, and if they... So the example they used was a DMR. If they took out the DMR and hit you with every shot, you would still die at the same rate.
Yeah, but if they miss a shot,
your shields might start to regen. Yeah.
So you can't just throw one down and win a DMR battle.
Right.
If the other person knows what they're doing.
Correct. Which is kind of an interesting balancing act if you think about it. Because if you're taking fire like that from Halo 3, you would take fire regen a little bit, take more fire regen a little bit, take more fire regen a little bit. And especially when it came down to melees, because it was, you could have an all-out bash and it would take 3 or 4 hits later before one of you guys died because you were sitting in a regen field. So what they've done with this regen field pretty much takes that out of play with that, and they're kind of playing to keeping the game fast-paced for Halo 4.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a new change to the regen field that people will probably want to get familiar with. So when you put that out, that's something you're going to want to keep an eye on.
It could be useful, though. I mean, especially if you're around a lot of teammates.
Yeah. Because you could kind of deploy it behind a corner or something, or if you're running away from someone and you know you can hide behind a corner, you throw it out ahead of you, then you turn the corner, and by the time you get there, you can start regening your shields.
Yeah. That kind of seems like the same strategy I might use with the auto sentry.
Yeah.
You know, kind of run behind a corner, toss it down, and just let him peg away at him.
So one of the things about the auto sentry that I saw at PAX, and they may have changed this for the final build, I'm not sure, but it seemed very easy to take it out, and it didn't seem like it really packed much firepower. Now, I didn't see it in use that much, so I can't really give a definitive answer for how powerful it is, but from seeing people shoot at it, it goes out pretty quickly. And
but, I mean, if they're shooting at the sentry, they're not shooting at me, so...
That is true. That's fine. That is true. Another little caveat to the other sentry is whenever you die, it derezzes with you.
Yeah, so you can't just leave it out and...
Right.
You know, rack up kills with it.
So, an interesting little scenario that they talked about on the show was having two people put up other sentries and then swapping places. And because the other sentry disappears when you die, people will just start to shoot you instead of the auto sentry. And if you swap like that, the auto sentry will still be there when you die because it's the other person's. Which is an interesting tactic.
Yeah.
I could see you using it on a map like a Drift. So that was the other... It's kind of a different armor ability related to the other three that we talked about, but that's... I see that being more used in objective games. I don't see that really being used in Slayer all that much, and I would use it more as kind of a decoy or kind of to clean stuff up. Like if you're going for a flat cap and it's just your whole team is trying to defend them from capping a flag, like if it stops maybe 10 feet in front of a flag, you would deploy some of these out so they could help clean up kills. I'd imagine it'd be those very niche opportunities where you would use those.
Well, I wonder if I no-scope somebody in the stomach, takes their shield down, right? How fast would the auto-sentry be able to get that kill? Shields are completely down.
That's a good question.
Because that would be useful. Like, if I see, you know, 2 or 3 people coming at me and I got a sniper rifle, yeah, and auto-sentry.
And I don't know how powerful the projectiles on the auto-sentry are.
Yeah.
So, I think since it goes out so quickly, I would assume that it has some punch to it. Maybe something like not quite as powerful as a DMR shot, but something that's kind of decent.
Like an AR shot, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe somewhere between the AR and a DMR.
Yeah.
Something like that. Or maybe one...
The Saw.
Or maybe one BR bullet compared to three. A trio of three.
I want to use that just once. The Saw? I don't know if I like it. The Saw.
The Saw.
I mean, I saw a gameplay video of it, and it seemed like it killed a dude pretty quick, like faster than I thought it would.
Yeah, the only thing is you have to make sure you're staying on the person.
Oh, yeah. That's true with all weapons.
Yeah, so I don't know, honestly, what I think of it, because it wasn't that PAX, so I didn't really get my hands on it. I didn't see it at PAX. It may have been there, and I just didn't see people using it. But I think it's going to be one of those weapons that it's kind of like, if it's there, and maybe I have a plasma pistol in my back pocket, I might swap it out for that. But other than that, I don't think it's going to be a very widely used weapon.
See, that's why they'll never see it coming.
Maybe that's why they have it in there.
I have no interest in the storm rifle, so
yeah.
I need to be interested in at least one automatic weapon.
I didn't see anything really gameplay-wise to the railgun that packs.
Yeah, I saw it in the gameplay videos, but I'm not exactly sure how it works. I'm sure they've put it up in the bulletin or whatever. But
so, from what I know, it does have to charge in between shots, but it charges up, and I think this is how it is. It charges up while you're not using it, and then the charge buildup stays there until you're ready to shoot.
Yeah, so that's...
So it's not like something... It's opposite of the plasma pistol where you have to charge up and then fire. It charges up, and it's ready to go, and then when you need to fire it, it fires.
Well, that was what I was worried about, because from the gameplay video I saw, it looked like the guy had to charge it up, and at that point, it's just like an underpowered Spartan laser.
So
really?
All right.
But if you can, like, hold a charge, even if you did have to, like, charge it up, but you were able to hold it down and use it whenever you needed to, then it would be more useful than the Spartan laser in certain situations. Not against vehicles, but against infantry.
Right. Well, I think there's, like, an initial... Like, it charges up, and then there's a slight animation before then where it activates the capacitors, and then it fires it off. I think there's, like, a slight delay for that.
Mm-hmm.
But it still has to have that initial charge of the actual gun before it can do the little loading of the capacitors and then shooting it off.
Also,
or discharging of the capacitors, I guess.
Is it a straight shot, or does it have like an arch to it?
I'm assuming with how fast the projectile goes, it's a straight shot.
So theoretically, you could use it, you know, for across the map kills.
I would guess so.
I mean, pretty accurately. If I have my reticule on a dude across the map, I charge it up and fire it. Is it going to hit him?
I would say there may be a little bit of a time delay, but...
Yeah.
I would think it would be pretty much straight. Although, well, so the tank shell does drop a bit, so maybe this one drops a little bit too. I don't know. That'll be something that we'll have to look at when the game comes out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything on the armor ability side that you want to bring up before we move on to the next topic that they covered in the Spark cast?
I'm thinking. Prometheus. I mean, those are the only.
But they really didn't talk about that. But
yeah,
I mean,
but
if
I'm
you
just
have
saying.
You want
just,
to talk about
just thinking about it. So
they definitely nerfed it. Before,
did they nerf it in? Go ahead.
Before at E3, you could use it for a bit. And then the charge would stay there, and if it was above the threshold, you could basically use it again while it recharged. But now, whenever you use the Promethean Vision, and then you turn it off, like even if you use it for a split second, it completely drains out. Then you have to wait the 6 seconds for it to start charging again.
So it's best to just stay in there for as long as you can.
Yeah. People at E3 were basically spamming it, so they were using it for a split second to try to check around immediate corners. They would turn it off. And they would still have a good amount of it left. They would hit it again a few seconds later, and then do the same thing until they just completely drained out.
Couldn't you do that with like different armor abilities and reach?
The only one I think you could do that with is...
Couldn't you do it with armor lock? I mean, you could obviously do it with sprint.
You could...
And the jetpack.
You could kind of do it with armor lock.
And evade.
Evade
had like three jumps before you had to quit, didn't you?
No, it was just two. It was two. Armor lock, whenever you initially use it, it takes a decent chunk out and then it starts to drain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not exactly the same. Because for the Promethean Vision, it was just on and it started to drain. It didn't jump down and then start to drain. It just started to drain, and then when you disabled it, it stopped. And then if you wait 6 seconds, it would start recharging again. But if you could still use it again, then it would just drain again. So they basically nerfed that to where once you stop using it, it completely drains out and you have to wait for it to charge up again.
I'm more of a fan of the mobility-oriented armor abilities. It's been that way for me since Reach.
So
I never enjoyed armor lock.
Would you be more of a thruster pack or a jetpack person?
Yeah, even like thruster pack or jetpack.
I mean, which one would you choose? I would.
If I had to choose, I would probably pick the jetpack, just because I love jetting around, and it's fun to be able to get up to you know, the second story of a building without having to run the ramp. So
that is true. That is true.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into some of the weapon information that we got. Some of the things I picked out. Whenever you are zoomed into a weapon now and you get hit, you won't get knocked out of zoom. Instead, you get the normal camera shake like you would normally get.
Yeah.
So depending on the type of weapon you have or you get shot with and the type of weapon that you're shooting with, the amount of camera shake will vary. And I forget what specialization it is. It's the one... maybe it's the one where whenever you get hit, it doesn't... It has the effect where the camera doesn't shake as much if you're using this...
Yeah, it's Rogue.
Okay, so yeah. Rogue basically reduces the amount of camera shake whenever you get shot and you're zoomed in.
Rogue gives you the ability to touch other Spartans and steal their armor ability.
No, that's not
that. That was an X-Men reference.
Oh. Oh, I see. I see. Took me a while. Okay, got it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks. The binary rifle is a one-hit kill no matter where you hit the person. The hip shot accuracy, though, is horrible. It's basically that of the shotgun. So you could be shooting from the hip, and it's really unpredictable to where the projectile may end up. But if you zoom in, it has... That's what you're going to be using it for. You're going to want to zoom in because that has the accuracy part of the binary rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And just like binary, you're either alive or you're dead.
Yep.
That's pretty much what the binary rifle is for.
On or off.
You get two shots per clip, and you get a total of... you can hold a total of 6 shots for the binary rifle at one time.
Can I share a kind of creepy story?
Sure.
So the other night I was having a dream that I was playing Halo 4.
Oh, boy.
And I grabbed what I thought was the Covenant beam rifle. But then I looked up and I saw that it only had 2 shots. So then in my dream,
it
turned out to be the binary rifle. And I was just wrecking it up on Ragnarok with that thing.
Nice.
I had a jetpack.
Very nice.
And the binary rifle. And it was creepy, too, because I kept finding, like, broken Xbox Live headsets everywhere. And
in the game?
It was strange. No, in my dream, outside the game.
Oh.
But when I was playing the game, like, I would see it, like, completely in first person. Like, it was just weird. Just saying that. Thought I would share that story.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I actually had a dream a couple of nights ago where I got Halo 4, like, on that day I was dreaming. So I think it was, like, October 2nd or something. And I was with, like, Bravo and Naked Eli for... It was basically, it would have been something that we would be doing for MLG Dallas or something like that. We're just hanging out in the hotel room. Some mysterious package comes along and it's addressed to me and I open it up and it's a copy of Halo 4. And it's like, oh, that's... Who sent this over? It's like, I had no idea.
And then you opened it up and it was a copy of Zelda, Skyward Sword.
No. It was Halo 4.
Dun, dun.
It was Halo 4. It was the box and everything. And there was actually 2 copies in the package. So I don't know why I had that dream. That was one of the dreams I had.
Just get
I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready for Halo 4. Is pretty much what I'm saying.
When I had that dream, I knew that I was ready. And I guess because I already know like the layout of Valhalla, mm-hmm. It was easy to imagine Ragnarok. Because even
right.
though I said that it wasn't like a carbon copy of Valhalla last
episode,
it's
pretty dang
close.
It's pretty dang close.
It's close enough to be a carbon copy. So.
Yeah.
Other than having different weapons and the mech on the map.
Right, which is pretty awesome. 343 released a video for that, and we'll get into that a little bit later as well.
Mm-hmm.
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 Oh, yeah. The gunner mod actually works with a detached turret, too.
Mm-hmm.
So the gunner mod is the one where if you're in the turret, it has the heat up. Takes a little bit longer, and the cooldown for the weapons faster.
The Pathfinder mod.
So, that is something... If you use a lot of... Or if you're gunning a lot, that's going to be one you want to use. But
I still want to get in a Warthog as an operator with somebody with the Pathfinder mod on my turret. And we just run around and wreck it up on that map.
Wait. So what... Okay, I'm confused. What's the gunner mod then?
The turret mod where it decreases the cooldown on the turret.
Is that Pathfinder?
Yeah, it's called the Pathfinder.
So what's the gunner mod?
The gunner mod... No, wait. Pathfinder is the specialization. Never mind. The gunner mod is...
Okay. Yeah. That's why I thought.
That's
okay.
Why I was confused. Never mind.
Got it.
So Pathfinders use the gunner mod.
That's okay. That's what I thought, but yeah. You're the expert on that one because I don't have that completely memorized yet.
I don't.
At least you know. That's all.
I just know the specialization list. That's the only thing I remember. I don't remember the actual names of the mods because I think on that list they didn't even name all the mods.
All right.
They just named the specializations.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
The shielding mod, which do you know what specialization that one's for?
Let me look it up.
The shielding mod, basically, the time it takes for you to start recharging your shield is not different from anyone else, but the rate at which your shields recharge is faster. And they said about by 15%.
Yeah, I don't see it on any of these lists. I'm looking at the IGN list, and I mean, I know it's a mod, I believe you, but I don't see it on any of the specializations. So it might just be its own, you know, mod by itself. It's not attached to a specialization. Maybe.
All right.
That sounds really, really useful in some situations.
Yeah.
If I get behind a corner and start recharging, that extra speed will really help.
Right. I'm trying to think of a good situation where I would use it. Because it would almost be one where you would want to have it almost constantly. Because who doesn't want a fast recharge rate? I mean, sure, you don't get like a time bonus, but still being able to recharge your shields faster, mm-hmm. that would change kind of like if your shields are down and you're hiding a corner and you know people are going to come at you eventually, it would almost change kind of when you start to run out.
Yeah.
Because you know how much your shields would be charged and you know how much damage you could take.
Well, it also increases the speed at which you can switch between having to hide and cover and, you know, popping out to shoot at the incoming enemy.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to hold down a position.
Right. The Nemesis mod. I did not write my notes down on this one that well. I said the Nemesis mod is present for only a short time. I'm trying to remember what they're talking about. Oh, that's... Okay, I got one. So... The Nemesis mod allows you to have an icon placed over the person that killed you.
Yeah.
So, if you have this mod, the icon doesn't stay up forever. It just kind of gives you a quick, maybe 2 or 3 second indication of where the player is and maybe what direction they're heading.
Revenge!
So, it's not something that you could basically overpower a player with. It is something that you can see where... Maybe he's camping there, and if when you spawn, you don't see him moving at all. You can kind of convey to your teammate, okay, where I died last, which was at some corner, this guy is camping here. Watch out for that. Or you could say, the guy that just killed me is heading through Ring 2 or something like that.
Well, also, if a sniper's camping out somewhere, you might be able to find his position mm-hmm. a little bit faster.
Yeah.
If you didn't check it from the kill cam. That's another use for the kill cam is...
Well, also... The Nemesis mod would almost be better off for game types that don't have the kill cam enabled.
Yeah.
So I would, but that, you bring up an interesting point with like the sniper perch. It's like you tell everyone to switch to Nemesis mod and try to find out where this dang sniper or camper is, and then you can have everyone switch back.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. Anything else on armor? Armor mods.
Hmm.
I pretty much picked out everything that I caught off of the podcast.
I don't know the full list, so I'm not sure. I don't know how many people are going to be using the operators mod. I don't know what it's called, but the operator specialization mod.
Isn't that the one where you get
early
look at what's being dropped, or is that something else?
No, it's the one where your vehicle recharges faster. And I don't know if that's the same
as... Oh, you mean it takes longer to damage the vehicle?
It says this allows you to recharge the health of a vehicle a little faster. It won't be super fast, but if you can get out of harm's way, you're going to recharge the vehicle's health faster than you would otherwise.
Wait, recharge?
Recharge. So I guess vehicle
health... So wait, vehicle health recharges?
I don't know. I'm just reading it off. That's what David Ellis said to IGN. So maybe...
I thought once you took damage, that's it.
In Reach, it was attached to your Spartan's own health, like they said on the podcast. But I assumed that it had like a fixed amount of... Yeah.
No. Because you could have a vehicle blow up and you could still be alive. Like, that's happened when you're in... Well, no, I take that... Oh, no, there's certain situations where...
I never died in a vehicle.
A vehicle blows up and yet you're still alive somehow.
Yeah.
So,
I've had that happen, whereas in like a warthog or something, or even a mongoose seemed to happen a lot more often, where the mongoose would blow up.
But you're still alive.
You would still be alive.
But it's like you could get in the flaming warthog, and then you could be shot with one DMR shot, and then you explode. So
that makes more sense. It would make more sense for the vehicle to have fixed health.
They were talking later on in the podcast about health buckets for the Banshee, and they talked about how the Banshee has certain amount of points for damage. So the vehicles have a certain set amount of damage that they can take.
That's something for Halo 5. We get to see vehicle hit points. How much HP does that vehicle have?
Well, apparently in Halo Reach, the Banshee had 330 points of damage, and in Halo 4, it has 475 points of damage. But that's adjusted, of course, to the weapons for Halo 4, so it still balances out all right.
Yeah.
But making that nice little segue, the health buckets for all the vehicles have been redistributed, and they've increased them in certain areas, and then kind of increased the damage that you can do to certain vehicle parts, where it affects the overall health a little bit differently than it has in past Halo games. So they've basically tweaked those for almost all the vehicles. One thing they've done to the Banshee to make it a little bit more balanced out is making the tricks a little bit slower. If you remember in Halo Reach, you'd have those Banshee pilots that would just go all day doing backflips and just Banshee bombing everybody on the map, which
made it no fun.
That
was always a fun way to get a splatter kill. It's like Banshee roll into somebody.
Just the random off chance that you manage to hit somebody just running by you trying to board you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they've slowed that down.
I hated Banshees in Reach. Ugh.
Yeah, I did too.
So annoying.
Mm-hmm. And then you would have told everyone to start shooting the Banshee. And it's like you could only land 3 or 4 shots at a time because they'd be doing tricks all day.
Well, nobody would shoot with me.
That too.
Everybody on my team... Go ahead.
A lot of people don't understand that the Banshee is one of the biggest threats in Halo Reach. Yeah. It's like that. It's like, don't worry about everyone else on the ground shooting. You take out the Banshee.
Don't worry about the Wraith. Don't worry about the Warthog. Like, let somebody with a plasma pistol take care of that. We need to go after the Banshee.
Exactly. I mean, even over a tank, a Banshee is more deadly.
Yeah.
Which shouldn't be the case, but it's how it is in Halo Reach. For the Scorpion tank, the shells actually drop a little bit, and the projectiles are slower, so if you've seen some of the gameplay footage from PAX, you will notice that it takes a decent amount of time for tank shells to get to its destination.
Mm-hmm.
And over long distances, the shell actually kind of drops a bit. So for a lot of these bigger maps, you'll start to see things not... You won't be able to snipe across map with a tank.
On the plus side, though, if there's like a hill or a rock or something, you might be able to like lob it across the rock and still land below your...
I don't think it drops that much. I think.
I haven't seen it. I don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe if it's like barely peek, like if the guy's barely peeking over a rock, then maybe. But
well,
I don't think.
Yeah,
I don't think
if they're like right behind the rock, you're not going to be able to like hit him. Well, the
yeah,
kind of the. Similar comparison.
Well, I mean yeah, he wouldn't be right up against the rock, but
I can't even remember what that thing's called. For the soldier.
Um,
the man, something shot.
It's been
anyway,
a while
that
since
thing
I played
would
Mass
like
Effect,
home in around
so.
Corners and behind cover. Like, that thing, like, it'd hone in on you even more than a needler does.
Oh, yeah?
So that was like, I loved using that.
Yeah, it's been a while since I played Mass Effect, so.
Yeah. Mass Effect was pretty fun.
I'm rusty on that. The Warthog and the Mongoose don't tip over as much anymore.
Yeah. According to the podcast, too, a frag grenade might be able to flip it over easier than it would in Reach due to the physics. New physics. Yeah.
Is the grenade splash that greater?
Well, I think the physics behind the explosions are more powerful as far as pushing objects around, not necessarily causing damage.
All right. I guess I missed that part.
Like with the concussion rifle, they showed him like popping a warthog around.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do any damage, but
yeah, warthog, the concussion rifle barely does any damage to vehicles, and it has a lot more physics impact than it does in Reach almost.
Which still doesn't make any sense to me, because as far as I'm concerned, the only thing I'm trying to do is get kills. If I can blow the vehicle up, fine, that's great. I'm not trying to flip it over. Because once they flip it over, they can get out and start shooting at you.
Well, yeah, it's a vehicle stopper, basically.
But I'm not even good at that.
The direct on hit with a concussion rifle is still, it's a decent amount of damage.
I mean, if
it's
anything,
it's not crazy, but it wasn't crazy
the warthog,
in Halo Reach either.
Pop a wheelie.
Well,
you can stick them.
Yeah, it's pretty much the physics impact is greater and the damage is a little bit less than it was in Reach.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is basically a vehicle thumper.
Thump them. Take your index finger out as a Spartan, just like thump a vehicle. Watch it fly off.
Yeah.
That should be a weapon in Halo 5. Like a little attachment put to your finger. It like glows, but it has the same strength as like a grav hammer.
Be a new version of like E.T. phone home thumper.
Bing! That's the sound it makes too, because it's a Microsoft.
Bing! Oh boy.
Hello, Mongoose.
Bing! Bing!
Ghost coming in.
Bing!
All right. That pretty much wraps up all the stuff I pulled from the podcast. Anything else that you picked up on that you want to talk about?
Not really. That was about it.
Yeah? All right.
It was a pretty good Sparkcast, though.
Yeah, it was really good. It was a little long.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Definitely go take a listen to it, guys. It's been out for about a week and a half now. They go into a lot more... Well, not too much more detail than what we covered. We just kind of hit all the bullet points, though.
At this rate, they might even get more listeners than we have, Dustin.
Oh, they probably will. I mean, they are the people making the game, so I hope they get more listeners than we do.
I wonder how many listeners they have. It's got to be in like the...
has to be in the hundreds of thousands, right? Yeah, yeah. Because our show with the Halo Council, which was episode 311, got over 50,000 downloads. I would imagine 343 would at least be double or triple that.
David L. is like laughing at us right now. He's like, fools!
Maybe.
I get 50,000 listeners just recording my single sentence.
Yeah. So let's move on to some of the multiplayer video topics that have come out over the last week or so. 343 released a Mantis gameplay video, I want to say over the weekend or on Monday of this recording.
It was over the weekend.
Was it over the weekend? I think it was on,
well, that's kind of weird. Do it on a Sunday. It might have been Monday.
All right.
Maybe. I don't remember.
So they basically had some slow camera screenshots of Ragnarok, and it was all nice and pretty. And then there's the mech, the Mantis. And this thing is basically a walking tank, almost.
Metal Gear!
It has a machine gun turret in the right arm and basically a missile pod in the left arm. And this thing deals massive amounts of damage. If you go watch the video, you can see how quickly it takes out a Banshee and a Warthog and other Spartans. And it's just a walking tank. It is literally a walking tank.
Yes, a tank with legs.
It is possible to assassinate it still. You have to do it from the back. You can't just go up to the front of it and assassinate it from the front, which makes sense. So you can plant a grenade in it just like you normally would be able to do with another vehicle. You could punch it until the driver dies, all that good stuff. One interesting feature for the Mantis is its melee ability, which is actually a stomp. So if a vehicle decides to come driving up to you, if it gets close enough and you stomp, it basically creates this shock wave where anything in and around your area will get crushed and or severely damaged. So there's a clip of a ghost driving up to it, and it stomps down, and the ghost just explodes, which
is
pretty cool.
That would be a good trick to use. Like, boost with a ghost at the tank or the mech, wait for it to stomp, and while it's in the stomping animation, keep shooting at it until it blows up. Or get around
it, maybe.
Start shooting it from the back.
I want to know, though, how easy it is to take it out, because it has its own shields.
Mm-hmm. It recharges.
Yeah, the mech has its own separate shields. It takes a while for the shields to start recharging back up again. I think it's like 10 seconds or so, or maybe double of what it is for a Spartan's. But it definitely can take a beating before it goes down, which I think is going to drastically change how the game flows in Halo 4 for this map and then whatever their other map they decide to put the Mantis in. Although we haven't seen any other maps that would be well suitable for it. The only other map I could think of would be Longbow.
Or the new map that they've...
Meltdown?
Yes, Meltdown. I could see it on Meltdown.
Maybe. Maybe.
Mechie.
Ha, 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 you're so funny.
That's not really that funny.
So funny.
But yeah, I could see it on Meltdown.
All right. I don't see it that much, but Abandoned? No.
No.
No. Sorry. Too close quarters for Abandoned. And Complex.
Put it on Wizard.
Complex, you're indoors all the time. So, I would say maybe on Meltdown. I would lean more towards a no. I think the only other map would be Longbow, really.
Yeah.
Or maybe it might just be a Ragnarok exclusive.
I hope not, because that thing is cool.
It is cool.
I just don't see it being like exclusive to Ragnarok, but getting this much attention from 343, you know, as far as the announcement, getting its own trailer.
Well, I mean, this is the first time that we've even heard about being playable in war games. We know it was playable in Spartan Ops and campaign, but we didn't know about it was going to be playable in war games. I got to start saying war games now instead of matchmaking.
I've noticed that some people were saying that they didn't want mechs in Halo. And I
didn't
understand
that. I
haven't
seen that anywhere.
Like, it was mostly on NeoGAF when I was just browsing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I was like, and then they put up the point that technically, like, your Spartan is like a walking mech. Like, your suit is like a mech.
Yeah, you're basically like a giant Spartan when you're in the mech.
So you're like
you're missing a head. You're missing
a
head, pretty much, when you're in the Mantis.
It's the inception of mechs.
Oh, my goodness. Stop it now.
What if you can put the mech into an elephant and put the elephant inside a UNSC carrier?
Oh, God. What's the new elephant called?
I have no clue. I've seen it, but
I
don't know
what
it's called.
I forget what it's called. Anyways.
The whale.
We have more details about the flood mode thanks to this week's bulletin, and there's some nice juicy medals to go along with it. But for the most part, the flood models are specific to the flood mode game type. I don't think you're going to really see it anywhere else within Halo 4. You have increased speed, increased... well, they didn't say anything about specifics on like what percentage it was of normal Spartans, but I'm assuming you have increased health, you have a bigger effect when you use armor abilities, including kind of a flood enhanced thruster pack. So if you've seen one of the videos, you'll see that the thruster pack is super effective when you're using it by an infected person.
It's super effective.
It's super... No, we went there. Dang it! Another podcast.
Well, I mean, you took the bait.
No. I threw it out there and you...
I set the line. You bit the hook.
But you were the one that reeled it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. And to anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, good.
Thank you.
Thank you. So the flood mode pretty much is identical to how it was in Halo 3 and Halo Reach. There's a few things that are key changes to it. It's a total of 10 players, basically free-for-all-like mode. You get killed by an infected, you respawn as an infected, of course. There are
Sounds like I've played this before.
There are two Alpha Flood to begin with at the beginning of the game, and then there's 8 humans. And there's actually an interesting screen effect that I either haven't seen enough videos with infected to really get the details of it or not, or it's not very bold of an impression that the effect is. But apparently you kind of get this kind of haze look around your HUD that you are a Flood. There's an armor effect that basically kind of these spores are coming out of your back. And then just like we heard in the CTF gameplay on Exile at PAX, when you kind of are walking a flag back or it's the final flags, there's the dramatic music at the end whenever there's one person left.
Dun 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 dun.
Wow.
No. My guess is that the HUD effect is kind of like Master Chief's HUD effect in Halo 3, whenever like the Grave Mind would start talking to him.
Yeah, something similar. Not as bold though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want it to be.
No.
That would be a really, really annoying.
Oh yeah, definitely. That was one of the most annoying things in the Halo 3 gameplay was the Grave Mind and Cortana interruptions.
Yeah.
We could have done without that.
Now, when it first happened, it was kind of cool because it creeped me out. Like when Cortana's like, "Chief, I'm watching," but she didn't even like. She was just talking nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got annoying.
You will be the best we can make you. Yeah. And of course, there's Flood assassinations. Haven't seen one yet, but it's going to be there.
That's something I want to experience for myself. I don't want to see it.
Flood assassination.
Don't want to see it in a video. I want to do it.
Fair enough. Do you want to go over the medals, or do you want to just tell people to go to the bulletin and look at those?
Should we introduce them here? Do we have a list of the medals?
Oh yeah, it's on the bulletin.
Okay, I'm trying to pull up the bulletin right now. Halo Waypoint is being really, really slow.
It's been really slow lately for me, all the time.
Yes.
Not just certain parts of the day, but all the time.
It's being flooded with traffic.
People want to know about Halo 3.
Well, actually, I didn't even mean that pun, so good on me.
I'll go ahead and read through the list.
Okay.
It's quite a lengthy list, but it's ones that are pretty standard to Halo. Flood conversion, convert Spartan to Flood. Alpha conversion, convert Spartan to a Flood as an Alpha. Infector, kill 2 Spartans in a row as a Flood without dying. Carrier, 3 in a row. Juggernaut, 4 in a row. Gravemind, all the Spartans in a row without dying. Flood kill, kill a Flood. Flood kill assist. No duh. Flood hunter, kill 4 Flood in a row as a Spartan. Flood survivor, 6 in a row. Flood exterminator, 10 in a row. Last man standing. Final conversion, which is kill the last remaining Spartan. Flood victory, contribute to the Flood total conversion of all Spartans. Ancient One, survive the entire round as a Flood and convert at least 1 Spartan. So that basically means don't die as a Flood and make sure you get at least 1 kill. And then Clever, survive the entire round as a Spartan. So those are all the multiplayer medals that you get during the Flood mode game type game.
I kind of miss Hell's Janitor.
Hell's Jerome.
Hell's Jerome.
Hell's Jerome. Each round is 3 minutes long, and the round ends by either all of the Flood killing the survivors or hitting the time limit. There are 3 rounds per game. And there you go. That's the information that we have for Flood mode.
Flood.
We pretty much kind of hinted on it last week because there was some video gameplay out, but thought we'd go over the details for you guys. Next on the list is the new map, Abandoned. This one's a pretty decent, I want to say mid-sized map. I originally tweeted out something thinking it was a nighttime map, but it turns out there's just certain parts of the map that are really dark, and there's actually sunlight that comes through on one end of the map. But I like having that kind of dark atmosphere to a map.
Yeah, kind of creepy.
I've always wanted to have some kind of nighttime-esque multiplayer map.
Did you enjoy Blackout?
It was all right. It was Blackout, so.
Yeah.
And everything was pretty well lit. Yeah.
But, I mean, it was still set at night.
This one feels different,
though. They
could
have done more with the dark aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is, like, creepy.
You're in the middle of a forest, and you're basically fighting around an abandoned science lab. There's two main buildings, and then it's just forestation all around. So it's a pretty cool map, in my opinion. It's a lot darker than a lot of the other multiplayer maps, and I'm really looking forward to playing on this one. Any comments for you?
Looks pretty
small.
Yeah,
it kind of is. There's lots of little backwalk areas around trees and rocks and caves and things like that. And then there's the two center bases. So there's not... It doesn't... From one of the videos I saw that was up on the Halo Council, it doesn't seem too small. There's lots of close quarters combat. But there's definitely places where you can wander out and kind of find little caves and things like that. The other multiplayer map that actually popped up today, I think, as of this recording. But
it did.
The final map in the list of disc-loaded maps is Meltdown, which looks strangely familiar to Ice Fields from Halo PC. It almost looks exactly like it. Very,
very,
very
similar.
And I tried to get Jess to comment on it, but she said she couldn't. So, they had in the bulletin this week some information about Abandon. So maybe next week we'll have some more information about Meltdown. So that would mean, though, that we have two remakes in Halo 4. What do you think about that? I mean, it's definitely one that's not as popular because it comes from Halo PC, but the layout is, from what I can tell, almost exactly like it, with a few maybe little cave changes, and then the two back bases from the fly-through that I saw aren't there, but the fly-through also didn't seem to cover the entire map, so there may be certain aspects of Meltdown that we haven't seen yet. And I know with a lot of the maps naming schemes, whenever they've done remakes, the names are always relevant to the previous name. So Ice Fields, Meltdown, they're pretty similar. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Yes, they
have. Ice Fields have melted down. They've melted down to form Meltdown. You get a nice little figure eight pattern going throughout the map. I enjoy that. I still think you can take a mech on it.
Possibly. It does look like some of the areas are a little bit wider, but underneath it seems a lot more narrow as well. So that's one of the reasons why I'm hesitant to say the Mantis would be able to be playable on this map.
So Scorpions are out of the question.
Likely, yes.
Yep. Yeah.
That's pretty much...
It's weird, because it's like a kind of a BTB map.
So I would imagine that you'd be able to have Ghost and Mongoose. I think it's one of those types of maps. And it definitely feels like a big team map, but big team on foot. Not big team in vehicles. That's what it feels like to me.
Right. I'm just trying to think of what objective types would work for that kind of scenario.
Well, so capture the flag would still work.
Neutral bomb, neutral flag.
I think most of the core game types would be fine with it. Regicide, maybe not as much, but...
But it sucked to have to, like... I guess if you have a Mongoose, you can drive them out, but... Mongoose are so vulnerable, you know?
Right.
So easy to blow up. You're unprotected. Anybody can just shoot you in the back of the head.
Well, I mean, that's
why
you're
driving
away.
It's
the fastest vehicle in the game. Well,
yeah.
Maybe compared to the Banshee, I'm not sure. It's the fastest land vehicle in the game.
I know. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a trade-off.
But I'm saying I would rather have somebody drive me with a Warthog if I
fair
had
enough,
a flag
fair
than
enough.
A Mongoose. Even regardless of the speed, because at least in the Warthog, I know
and
the back of my head's protected. Yeah.
Kind of defer those bullets coming in. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing on the bulletin that we have is, of course, Ford and Tadan premieres this week. It actually, as of this recording, it premieres tomorrow. So if you're listening to this, it's either coming out today or it has already come out and you should go watch it. We will be doing little short analysis shows after each episode of Ford and Tadan. So we'll take 20, 30 minutes to kind of go over what was shown in the video and kind of give our opinions of the episode, and we'll do those for each one. So something really short, simple, not a long 2-hour show like we end up doing almost every time somehow. I don't know. So there'll be one right after this show pretty much coming out, and we're looking to keep it short. Are you excited for Ford and Tadan, Brent?
Yes, very much so. I thought that I wouldn't be, but just on the vignettes that I've seen,
this is pretty much the
pretty cool.
as close to a Halo film as we're going to get.
Yep.
So it's
pretty much.
Yeah.
Enjoy it while you can.
This is definitely something you're going to want to look into, guys. And it premieres October 5th. That means it's either coming out the day you're listening of this, or it's already come out and you should go watch it. And it's premiering on Machinima Prime and Halo Waypoint. So make sure you go check it out.
Even if you're on your Xbox, check it out.
Because you can get Waypoint on your Xbox. And you can get Machinima Prime through YouTube.
Yes.
Although the search functionality on the YouTube app sucks. They need to fix that. Wrapping.
What are you most excited about for What Untadon about? Like, as far as what part of the series excites you the most?
So, I'm really interested into seeing how this kind of ties in with the beginnings of, I know this kind of follows more of the cadet story, but I really want to see what stories of Chief is going to be involved with this. Because Chief does play an integral role, even if it's a small role. I want to see kind of how Chief's story from the books and the rest of the games fits in with Ford and Tadan. That's what I'm excited to see about this Machinima series. What about you?
I'm excited to see the human aspect of Halo as portrayed through the lives of the cadets. Because that one vignette where they like show the guy driving around on the Warthog, even though he's not
That looked fun. Yeah,
was pretty funny. Just getting an idea that the Chief is in this universe with real humans who are fighting for the same cause that he is, even though they don't have the same strength or armor that he does, obviously. Getting the more human condition feel out of the Halo series interests me a lot. That's why I think a lot of people connect with Sergeant Johnson as a character. Because he was obviously, not more human, but you could see more of his humanity than you could the Chief's.
Okay. All right.
So,
let's see. The last thing on the bulletin, and this is actually something that people that are really into the audio aspect of Halo, you'll be interested in. But there is a contest for the Halo 4 soundtrack. It's a remix contest, and there's a bunch of prizes up to receiving Xbox consoles, games, headsets, laptops. And what you can do is go to Halo4Remix.com. And even if you're not interested in the contest, there are 3 full tracks up on that website that you can go listen to. They are Awaken, Nemesis, and 2 Galaxy. So if you want to hear a bigger sample of the soundtrack, make sure you definitely go to the website and check it out. If you are a sound guru and you are remixing stuff, which I would be interested to see if someone listens to this podcast that actually does this kind of stuff. If you do, send us an email. Let us know that you do this kind of stuff. Tell us that you're entering the contest, and we'll even promote some of your work on here. So, yeah, we'll play it for people to listen to, let them know what they think. So if you're into that kind of thing, let us know. Send us an email, submissions@podtacular.com.
We're taking your requests live on...
Not quite live.
...Duststorm Radio. We're taking them not quite live on Duststorm Radio.
All right.
97.7. The Flood.
Very nice. See, you make a good radio personality. I don't know why you think you don't, but you nope. Totally fit the personality, dude.
No. Overly excited and
you could do it.
Poorly
you could do
trained.
It. I could see you as a miniature Jack from Rooster Teeth. Mini Jack.
Mini Jack.
Mini Jack on 97.7 The Flood.
97.7 The Flood.
Okay, Goldenrod Radio. Well, yeah. I don't know about that. It would fit if we actually did the podcast for Goldenrod Radio.
Yeah, we would actually have to do one.
We're
going to
do it at some point.
Whether or not it sucks.
We have to.
Well, maybe.
We're obliged to.
Black and White 2 comes out in like 4 days or something.
I still haven't played. Yeah. Still haven't played Heart Gold, dude.
The sequel.
And that's where Goldenrod Radio comes from. Well, Gold version, but Heart Gold is the second iteration of it. But yeah.
Well,
1 and 2,
the best
yeah.
games in the series.
Red, Blue,
Soak
Yellow, Gold, Silver, Crystal were the best Pokemon games, in my opinion. And then you have Leaf Green, Fire Red, Heart Gold, Soul Silver that were the successors to those.
Yes.
Emails. We have some submissions from you guys over the past week or so on your opinions of all the news that's come out. We're still getting, I don't know when this is going to stop. We're getting a boatload of news, and I don't think it's going to stop. It's
Nope.
I know. It's
the hits just
gonna
keep on
keep
coming.
Coming, and then Halo 4 is going to be here, and everyone's just going to be jaw-dropping, excited to play the game.
No one's going to listen to us because they're going to be too busy playing.
We're going to be pumping out shows left and right, and hopefully we'll be pumping out a bunch of smaller shows so we don't have to drown your ears out while you play Halo 4. So whenever you just need a short break, you can listen to us instead of a long 2-hour break.
We might be pumping out some videos.
Yes, we will be pumping out some videos. We'll be doing a few achievement guides. Achievos, indeed.
Achievos.
Have a couple of ideas for some other video type things that we can do. Kind of have to explore that this month before Halo 4 comes out, so we'll see how that goes. But to emails, let's kind of get these out of the way pretty quick, shall we? RJ Diaz writes in, "Hey, Podtacular, this is my first submission, and I hope it fits in with this show. What primary weapon do you think will, excuse me, what primary weapon do you think would be the best or would be the most used in matchmaking? Oh, and where is the forge info? Keep on fracking trucks."
Battle rifle.
So it's interesting because from the Sparkcast this last week, they said that when the MLG people were at the studios to play test and kind of help them balance out things, there was an even split between BR and DMR. And then with the new information that the carbine actually has the best long range accuracy out of all the primary weapons, and then with the light rifle, I think we're going to see a wide variety of primary weapons used, but I think the DMR and the BR are probably going to be the two big ones. Because I think we have some people that are coming in from Halo Reach that haven't really played Halo 3 before, and then we have people that absolutely loved Halo 3 and are coming on board with this new game and they're going to stick with the BR first. But there are so many unique circumstances that really are tailored to each one of these weapons that it really is up to your playstyle on what primary weapon you end up settling into after a month or so. And maybe you may even change it between game types and maps. It's very dynamic, and there's a lot of customization that you can do with these, and I think 343 has done a really good job of presenting players with the opportunity to customize their experience and gear it towards highlighting their skills that they know they're good at. They've done that with the armor abilities, the tactical packages, the loadouts, and everything in Halo 4 is geared towards highlighting and enhancing your experience and your skills and providing a faster gameplay experience throughout war games and everything else. Those are kind of the two key components I think 343 is gone with Halo 4. You want to take the next one?
Yes. Horizon says, "Now that Halo 4 has gone gold, it would be nice to see 343 Industries allow Bungie to be the first to play the game in its completed state. I know that if I worked for 343, this thought would have crossed my mind and would be a great gesture of respect. Make an event out of it with pizza, beer, brats, the works. Maybe even a friendly tournament between the developers. While it may be a stretch, hopefully someone from 343 hears this podcast and proposes the idea. Anyway, would love to hear your guys' thoughts on this, and keep up the great work. Oh, and I actually enjoy the 2-hour podcast. Work drags, and you help the time pass.
Thanks. So let me pose this question before answering the first question. Would you enjoy a long 2-hour show, or would you enjoy a few short 30-minute shows where you're more up to date on your information? Think about that a little bit.
Me personally? I know that personally, I enjoyed long podcasts back when I was listening to them.
Right.
Back when 1UP had really good podcasts. Some of those podcasts were like 2 or 3 hours long. Really. Right. Every week. Like clockwork. GFW Radio, 1UP Yours, EGM right. Live.
So we'll be putting out a survey shortly.
Retronauts.
And I actually meant to do this last month, but stuff just came up, and it looks like this month may be a little bit better because we have a month leading up to Halo 4, so we really have a chance to kind of tailor the podcast between now and then. So we'll put out a survey shortly related to what you guys think of the podcast, what you would like to see stay, maybe some things to be changed, like the duration of the show. Maybe you don't want as many tangents. Maybe you want more tangents.
Make sure to suggest more Pokemon talk.
Well, if we do that, we're just going to have to make a separate show and do Pokemon Radio.
Right.
So we'll have that out within the next week or so. But let's kind of address this first question. I think it would definitely be paying homage to Bungie for making the game if they did something like that. I don't think it would necessarily be a public event. It just may be something where they invite the studios over and basically hang out and have fun with the game. And they may have done it already. Who knows? But I
don't know. Maybe that would seem like something you would do. I mean, if you're taking the reins on a franchise that a studio's worked on for
right.
10 years, only seems fair.
And give them discounted copies of the game, if not free. I would say
yeah,
free.
Yeah, give them free.
But
come
it's
on.
Microsoft. I mean,
yeah, but I'm saying they've got to have like copies of the game. They can
I would imagine
give to
so.
Them,
yeah.
Right? That I mean, if I were a studio manager, and I had a party like that, I would make sure that everybody received a copy of the game.
Yeah, I would too.
You know, I mean, because basically, they're continuing the work that
yes.
Bungie started, right? So in a way, what they do mm-hmm. reflects on Bungie. It shouldn't work that
right.
way, but it does, you know? I mean, they're having to continue the work. They're taking the things that Bungie created, characters that Bungie created, a universe, gameplay set that Bungie created, and
right.
working on that, you know?
Yep.
Refining that. So, give them free games.
Have
go for
a party.
It. Have a party.
Next one is from Dutybound. He writes in, I feel like they shouldn't spoil any more about the Halo 4 campaign. I think that we have heard enough, and I don't want it to wreck the experience for me. I honestly don't think we're going to get any more Halo 4 campaign information.
No.
No.
Not if they know what's good for them.
I think at this point they've released just about the right amount of information. I would like to see something about Forge-related information, and then maybe some extra information about theater, maybe changes they've made to theater. If any?
I don't really think they've made any,
yeah.
or else they would have announced it by now.
There's always some more multiplayer information that they can release, and I think that's what everyone is looking for.
Yeah.
At least one more making of video, and I wouldn't mind seeing, and I mean, this is campaign related, but I wouldn't mind seeing kind of a backstory of Covenant between Halo 3 and Halo 4. It kind of sheds on some light on why the Covenant, or why this faction of the Covenant is there. How did the Covenant break up into these different parts? Because I'm not sure you'll get that delivered in the actual game. So I wouldn't mind seeing a making
yeah.
Halo 4 video with that kind of information in it. To continue on, correct me if I'm wrong, but Spartan Ops takes place on Requiem. That's correct. This leads me to think at the end of the campaign, Chief leaves Requiem, while the UNSC Infinity and its crew stay. I think that Cortana dies towards the end of the campaign, forcing Chief to leave the planet to find Halsey, who can save Cortana. I think Cortana sacrifices herself in order to kill the Didact or something else heroic. This would be why Chief is not in Spartan Ops and sets the story up in Halo 5. Cortana's not going to die. She's going to be through till Halo 6. If she's going to die at some point, it'll be in Halo 6. What do you think, Brent? That'd be my guess. Oh, and you're gone. As far as going to see Halsey, there may be a point where that's going to happen. It may be something that may happen in Halo 5. Not exactly sure what happens. I don't think there's going to be any sacrifice, and we don't even know if it's the Didact yet. We don't know if it's him or maybe Minikin Bias. We honestly don't know. And the Chief could be around for Spartan Ops stuff as well.
What if an AI Chief helped you out in Spartan Ops? Would that be cool, or would it suck?
What do you mean? Like, would, like, come up on your HUD and give you orders or something? I mean, that wouldn't be AI.
No, like, the Chief just shows
up
for, like, no reason. It's like, bro, I'm here to help you. I brought Cortana. Let's get
this
show on the road, buddy. Let's wreck it up.
I would say probably not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of the Master Chief's mythos is that he's pretty much alone, always. As far as, you know, being a Spartan, being on his own, doing his own thing.
That's in the games.
The only person he's got. If you look at the books,
it tells a different story.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, we're talking about the game.
But look at how much the books are influencing the game now. Look at how much they've tied the stories together, and they're trying to tie the stories together.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's only a certain amount of connection they can make with the books and still maintain that player base, because there's a large number of Halo players who have never even touched the Halo book.
Yeah, but most of those haven't really even touched.
They have no clue what's going on.
The campaign.
I wouldn't say that. I would say that there's a good portion of players who played the campaign of all the Halo games and
which
never
is fine,
touched a single Halo book.
I honestly don't think trying to incorporate the whole mythos behind the books into the game for those people is going to be that big of an issue, because it's just more to the story. I think for people that are really into the campaign and the story of Chief, have read the books, and are really looking forward to that integration. I think for people that just play the campaign to kind of get that story, they like the story that's in the campaign, but I don't think it's that big of an issue to them for adding this extra stuff in there. That's just how I feel about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I would actually like more expanded canon making its way into
the
main franchise.
And it sounds like that's what they're doing.
But I don't know how much of that they're going to be able to put in there and still maintain a large audience. Because Halo is a very popular game.
But
the Master Chief is a very iconic character. I mean, and the only reason he's iconic is because those people played the campaign. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they read any of the books or have any idea about the
expanded universe. But if you keep that focus on the Chief, still bring in other story aspects of the franchise into the game, and it shouldn't affect people's views of the Chief.
Like, did people get really confused when they introduced Halsey into Reach? Because she was essentially basically an expanded universe character.
She totally was. Pretty much. A lot of people who had read the books identified that, and a lot of people who didn't saw that people did, and they mentioned that. And from what I heard, no one disliked it, and people were very understanding of that part of the Halo universe.
Well, if anything, it's a good chance to get people into the books. You know, make them play the game, let them have kind of an idea of what's going on. But if you want to know more, if you want to really understand,
has come out
you
and said
read
that
this.
You don't have to read the books in order to enjoy the campaign or the Spartan Ops experience. It really enhances the storyline if you have read the books and you know more of the story behind Halo. But it doesn't take you out of the scene of what the games have established.
Do you think that you would have enjoyed Halo Reach better if you hadn't have read The Fall of Reach?
No.
And, like, notice the differences between the two, like...
enjoyed it less, actually. I think being able to read... I think being able to read those books and know what's going on in and around that time frame of the game was really interesting. Because you know where it fits in with the books. You know what the Chief has been through. You know that the Covenant are here looking for something. I mean...
Well, and understanding the importance of Reach.
I mean, Reach was the first planet that the Covenant didn't just completely obliterate.
Well, it was basically the UNSC's biggest outpost, their largest military
installment. Right, but there was also Forerunner artifacts there.
Yeah, but I mean, just as far as what it meant to humanity.
But it served a dual purpose.
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying, if you hadn't have read the books, would you have really known that Reach was the largest, you know, UNSC...
No.
Military base in the universe?
No.
Within that galaxy, like...
And you wouldn't really know the depth of why delivering that fragment of Cortana was that important.
Yeah.
So it adds... Reading the books adds a lot of depth to the campaign storyline of the games.
So that's another thing,
Thursday
too.
War.
A new book came out that I have absolutely no idea about what it's like. I don't know what it's about. I don't.
I'm still on the Cold Protocol. I'm trying to get through the books as quickly as possible. I will probably go pick up Thursday War here in a couple of weeks. I'm trying to get through as many of the books as I can before Halo 4 comes out. It's going to be a long month trying to get all those books done. But I'm going to do it.
So do you have any idea of like what time period this book is set in?
It's...
Is it set after... Halo
it's a
3,
Karen Travis one, right?
Yes.
This, I could be completely wrong here, but I think this is related to the time between Halo 3 and Halo 4. I'm not exactly sure beyond that, to be honest. I should know it, and I mean, I'm reading through the books to try to understand it, but I just don't know off the top of my head.
I really
yeah,
need to
you
read
do.
These books. You know, if I'm going to host a Halo podcast, I feel like I need to know as much about
the universe as I can. That's one of the beautiful things of Halo is that you don't have to read the books or be in a subject matter expert in every aspect of Halo in order to enjoy it. I mean, you look at most people don't even touch the campaign, and there's an equal number of people that don't even touch the multiplayer.
I'm just saying, as a podcast host who hosts a podcast about Halo, I feel like I need to know this stuff. Like, it makes me feel bad.
I wouldn't feel bad.
Because people... Well, I mean, I don't feel like real bad. Like, quit. I can't handle this anymore. I need to know everything. But I mean, like, when people ask questions about the franchise, you know, if we ever get a submission or something, you want to know that stuff.
And something like this that just came up is like, I should know this. And I'm actually looking it up right now, but... I know what you mean, and it does kind of suck, but at the same time, you have to look at all the other aspects of Halo that you know about and you know your stuff in, right? So,
right. But most of that is in, like, multiplayer.
Well, yeah, it's
and that's
it's very
a huge part of Halo, but...
Okay, I found and this is from Halopedia.org. Halo... The Thursday War picks up immediately where Halo Glasslands left off with forces on Earth and among the Covenant threatening a peace that is precarious at best. So this is talking about the human and Covenant relationship between Halo 3 and Halo 4. So I was close.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing that's the little quote on the back of the book. So definitely... So that kind of actually addresses my comment earlier, getting some backstory between the human and the Covenants between the games.
If you want to understand why this Covenant splinter group hates you.
Wow, that's just kind of a gentle slap in the face for me. Getting back to this submission that we've just long forgotten so far, still from Duty Bound. If you guys want a free Halo 4 Gold Spartan avatar for Xbox, sign up for Xbox Rewards, then watch... or leave your Xbox running for 3 of the 4 political debates for 30 minutes each on Xbox Live. So, like Frankie said, he will ban you if you do not vote. If you're eligible to vote, of course. And, I mean, he won't actually go out and ban you, but it's important that you vote. So, if you haven't registered,
yes,
you can go to rockthevote.com, and you can find out all the details that you need in order to get yourself registered in your state to vote for this election.
Exercise Definitely. Your civic duty.
And this is a big election, people. I mean, if you watched yes. the political debate last night, as of this recording, Wednesday, October 4th, then it's something that you should be aware of. Yeah.
Don't you wish Daph
he's
was
online,
here?
But we're already like an hour and a half into it before he messaged me, so. What do you guys right. think about the new Flood game type? Will it affect custom games? How about Fat Kid, Ice Cream Man, and any other infection game where the infected need to have a weapon? I assume that we will have the option to either have Flood Infection or Vanilla Infection. Here's hoping. Maybe for theater, there will be able to view first person from another player's view. Have you ever noticed that in theater mode in Reach, if you watch a video of a game that has rounds in it, the first round will be your character, but somehow for all the next rounds, you will be in the first person from some other player's view. Usually it's someone from the opposing team. It's a really weird glitch. I just wish it could be a tool and not a glitch. Lastly, I like Brent Gamer in the show. Make him stay.
Aw.
I think he's here to stay. But, let's yes, see. I'm going through these stay. Questions. Affecting custom games for Flood. I think that I'm not sure if we'll see a quote-unquote vanilla infection game type. Yeah.
Vanilla Flood. That's exactly. a new flavor at Baskin-Robbins.
I wonder how it tastes, though. Because you usually have, like, French vanilla, homemade vanilla.
Tastes like
okay,
infected pus.
I did not
pus.
Need to know that. I honestly... Because it's a drastic change. It's what infection should be like. You should be Flood fighting to kill humans. That's pretty much the essence of what Flood mode is.
Zombies taken to its ultimate conclusion.
Yeah, it is.
Really? I mean, the zombies game type from Halo 2, I don't know if it was in Halo 1. It might have been. I don't know
yeah,
if you
I
could
think
switch
it was more
teams
Halo 2.
In Halo 1. Don't know. In Halo
yeah,
2,
it was
though,
a huge
it was
custom.
Huge online. People were playing. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. why it ended up in Halo 3. And it ended up in Halo
yeah,
Reach.
Yeah, he makes
you know,
a good point, though,
infection.
About Fat Kid and Ash Command, even though I don't like those two. I personally like Speed, as everyone knows who comes to Monday Night Matchmaking. I would imagine they would keep those possibilities in there somehow in another kind of game type variant. I personally would like to see some rendition of the insane game type from Reach come back, because there are some pretty cool custom games that have come out because they released that. Let's see. First person views of other players, that's tricky, because that means you're having to receive a lot more data across the network, which is just going to lag out a game. So that's not going to happen. In terms of like watching theater and next round changing from your player to another player, I've only seen that happen in cases where the game that you were playing in had a severe amount of lag in it. Or that if you lagged out at some point, it switches to another person. I've never seen it go to a first person view. It's always been a third person view that it changes to, because it doesn't even have first person data attached to it. I have seen the case, though, that you're talking about where between rounds or maybe between a host change, it will go back to a person that's not your character. That is a glitch that I think needs to be fixed, though. Any comments, Brent? All right.
Nope.
He also says, P.S., has the Halo Reach legendary ending been found? It's yes. the same as the regular ending for everything else? There's no special ending, if that's what you're trying to imply.
Do you consider the room inside the last level?
Second
not
last
the last level.
Level,
but inside yeah. Halsey's lab? That to me is like kind of a legendary ending for
it's
Reach.
It's an homage to all the communities.
I don't know.
Not everything that been building up Halo since its inception. So, yeah, you can kind of think of it as the legendary room. Because it's only available in legendary. So, I guess in a way, you could consider it that. Yeah.
A little bit. My dream is to one day have Podtacular make its way into an homage room.
Yeah.
Or some sort of reference in Halo. Anything.
You know
like
how
a
they have the special things at the end of the game?
For...
I would honestly like to see Podtacular in there. I mean, not to play like self-righteous and everything and trying to ask to be in there, but it would be cool to see Podtacular in that list.
That'd be messed up. It says, like, thanks for nothing, Podtacular.
And then BS Angel at the bottom of every community that's on there says, you're fired. Yeah.
You're fired.
We get fired quite often, people. And if she listens to this, she's probably going to fire me over Twitter
right
again. So, yeah, you can guarantee that happening. You want to read the next one? We have three more people.
Yes.
Bear with us.
Shadow.
Or four more, actually.
Okay. Well, I mean, why do we read these if we don't want to? Or if people don't like them?
It's not like a burden.
No, I enjoy
I'm just
reading them.
Letting people know. Because we're almost about to hit the two-hour mark, so I'm just letting people know.
All right. Yeah, but I'm saying if they're at work or something, they're able to listen to this. Like, they don't care. Like, okay. Shadow says, hey, PodTac, we all know that Halo is in our lives and blood. Ha ha! I wanted to know, out of the whole Halo timeline since Halo CE, which were your most memorable moments? Mine was when I used to get together with all of my Halo friends to play Halo 3, which was so fun and awesome. Looking back, that was my most memorable time, playing with bros and keep playing all night. We all made a Halo 4 day reunion to play again to have the same fun we used to, but with a new game. Can't wait till then. Hope to get your say in it and hear about your moments. Like Brent said, keep fragging those mechs.
Most memorable moment.
I know mine. I'll let you go first. Son.
It's going to take me a little bit. You go first.
Okay. So, I'm not sure. I think it was the Forward Unto Dawn in Halo 3 when it like just pops up out of nowhere. Like, you see this thing coming in. It was on the Ark.
Oh, right.
In the desert. Left. And it's like the epic music starts playing and like Forward Unto Dawn comes in and like drops off warthogs and a scorpion and all sorts of stuff. That moment was cool to me for some reason. I just really enjoyed that. And that's where we got Tank Beats Everything from. So
just right after that part too. I honestly don't know what my most memorable moment was. I mean, I've had so many memorable moments just on this podcast. Like, look at the decade shows that we did. The four-part series that we did leading up to Halo Fest. I mean, I would say between that and Halo Fest itself, those contain some of the most memorable moments I have about Halo. It's not necessarily anything specific in the game, but it's just the community around this franchise that is really cool. And if you have watched any of our PAX vlogs, even from this year's PAX, just the sense of family that you get with being around other Halo people and community leaders is just, it's one of those warm and fuzzy feelings that you really can't describe how it's there, but you just know that it's there. That's what is probably the coolest thing about Halo is to me, is the community and family aspect of the franchise. And the fact that I can be sitting here talking to you guys through a microphone, voicing my opinions.
Yeah.
With Brent.
What other game could you do this for? There are a few other games on the planet for which you could have a podcast of this length.
And going on for over 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Over 300
over
episodes.
Over 3 million downloads. It's crazy. It's something where you think that when you first start up, this isn't going to go very far, but you put time and effort into it, and for me, 4 years later, this is where I am. I'm making shows that average around 15,000 downloads per show. I get to meet some of the coolest people in the Halo community, and I get to be friends with people that actually help make the game. You can't say that for many other franchises out there. And I'll take this moment to say thank you to Jessica, Allison, Kevin Franklin, Kevin Grace, Frankie, everyone over at 343 Studios who is committed to making Halo 4 the best Halo game that they can make. Knowing that most of them have come from a standpoint that we're currently in, just being fans of the game, and then going to make the game that they feel is the best portrayal of the Halo franchise that people are going to relate with and something that they're happy with. And then shout outs to people who, like Fumo, who started this, Louis Wu, who is in charge of the biggest Halo community out there, halo.bungie.org. He's basically the godfather of the Halo community. It's those people that make Halo even that much better. Because Halo on itself, yes, is a good game. But it's the Halo community that really brings people together and makes Halo the best online first-person shooter experience, in my opinion, and the opinions of many other people.
I don't know because I'm not in the Call of Duty community, but that's kind of what separates Call of Duty from Halo,
yeah,
for me.
Definitely.
At least, is the community. The quality of community members, just the close-knit relationship that our communities have. It's not like there's not a lot of rivalry even between the communities. There's a lot of camaraderie and just having fun with a game that we all love, you know? And I'm not gonna lie, at first I was skeptical about 343.
A lot of people were.
I didn't know. I mean, this was before they had even brought on people like BS Angel and I think even Frankie. He might have been in the original batch, I don't know. But like David Ellis. I was just skeptical. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't, you know, expect them to fail, but I didn't know what we would get out of them. I didn't know if we would get the same kind of Halo experience that we've gotten for the past four major Halo games, you know, excluding ODST.
Right.
But seeing all of these videos, seeing their passion for the game, seeing how much interaction they have with the community, with us even, it's given me a lot of faith in 343. And I think Halo 4 is going to be a great game. If not the best Halo of all time.
Yes.
You know, the boots that they're trying to fill are massive. They have massive shoes to fill on this one. Halo is one of the biggest gaming franchises of our time. I mean, the video gaming industry is a young industry as it is anyway. I mean, it only really started in the mid 70s. And within our time, Halo is probably the biggest sci-fi franchise of our time.
Well, and it's,
I'm not going to say
well,
the biggest
it's one
gaming
of the most
franchise
complex.
Because Call of Duty as well, yeah. And as far as just having really refined gameplay that
it works.
You can look
it
at
works.
It and say, "Yeah, that's
yeah.
Halo."
And what that's other Halo. Franchise can you look at and have an equally interesting discussion with multiplayer as you can with the campaign? You can't do that with Call
oh,
of
yeah.
Duty because
I mean, there's
no one talks about the campaign.
The campaign,
Battlefield
is
3 is a purely competitive game. They tacked on the campaign aspect to it, but it's a competitive multiplayer game. It's been built like that. Gears, it's incorporated the multiplayer aspect, but the real guts of Gears is the storyline. Halo's the only one to me that really seems like you can have interesting debates between multiplayer and how the physics of the games function, just the strategies that you have on different maps, what weapons do you use in certain situations, the competitive scene, MLG, and then you have the flip side of the campaign where you have the books that supplement to the story of the campaign and Master Chief, Cortana going rampant, Halsey involved, and all this other stuff. It's all-encompassing. Halo is a beautiful thing, really.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a beautiful franchise.
Well,
and I mean,
yeah,
I'm
biased. Yeah.
But I'm biased for a reason. Yeah, I mean, I'm biased for a reason. I love Halo because
and
I
it's
love
not
Halo.
Like we look at the other games and we just say they're complete crap. We play other games all the time.
Other games
Halo to us is something that really speaks to us from the aspect of the storyline and then really flows well from a multiplayer aspect.
And there's so many different aspects of it, too, that have almost equal importance.
There's a creative aspect with Forge. Look at some of the Forge art people made and some of the crazy maps that people have gone out and made and work really well.
I mean, you want to be like an amateur map developer, and I don't mean amateur as like a derogatory term. I mean just learning the basics of good map design and things and be able to actively...
Learning how
forges your
the
way
flow of that. Games work, how putting certain weapons in a certain area will change the game flow of a certain game type. I mean, that's all there with this game.
So you have the Forge community.
Yeah, Machinima is another
one. You have the Machinima community. You have the multiplayer community. Multiplayer even splits off into two different communities. I mean, there's a portion of the multiplayer community that, I mean, the largest portion that doesn't even care about the extremely competitive MLG scene and just loves, like, you know, the customs and regular matchmaking. And then you have the competitive scene with MLG. You know, I mean, to me, Halo defines MLG. I know that there are other games that are played in MLG, but when I think of...
You think
when
Halo.
Somebody says MLG, right. I think Halo. Yeah. Then you have the campaign, and if you just like the campaign and you're not into the expanded universe, that's great. But, I mean, you can even get into the expanded universe. There's just so many aspects of Halo that you can get into, and there's an equal amount of importance that the developers seem to put on each aspect, you know. They never skip on any of these parts, you know. Like, with Forge, they outsourced certain affinity to work on Forge. And, I mean, you might say, well, yeah, they outsourced it because they were lazy and they didn't. No, what they did was they found a development team that they've worked with before because certain affinities made map packs for Halo since Halo 2. I mean, they made the last maps for Halo 2 with the Hang 'em High remake and what was that other one called? Nobody played.
I know what it looks like. I just don't know the name of it.
But even Certain Affinity was a group of people who had originally worked on Halo matchmaking. You know, Max Hoberman leads that studio. He knows Halo. He's worked with Bungie in the past. He's worked on Halo, you know, in the past. So they know what they're doing. And they outsourced Forge to Certain Affinity so that they knew that they could have an entire development team working on this single aspect they knew was going to be a massive part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy about that. I'm glad that there was a development team dedicated to working on that single part of the Halo experience, because I'm not sure that even with the size of 343, they would have been able to spend as much time on Forge as they would have wanted to if they had worked on it themselves.
I love how one of the shortest submissions that we has the longest effect. Wow. The Halo community is just great people. Owen Rose is the next guy who writes us saying, do you think that the UNSC Infinity will remain our home for multiplayer throughout the new trilogy? Also, do you think the improvements in Halo 5 and 6 will be enough to keep the franchise evolving and fresh? I don't see why not, for the Infinity being a multiplayer hub. It depends on how the story goes on after Halo 4. And I don't think we really understand that until we see the final level of the game and then how Spartan Ops plays out. Because do we go to another Dyson Sphere that's somewhere in the galaxy? Is there another Shield World that we go to? Do we find some evidence of Forerunners that we go on a trail of some kind?
Do you end up on another Halo?
I honestly think that part of the story is over.
I'm just saying it's out there. There are other Halos available to land on.
But I think we're almost past that, and we're looking at kind of the bigger picture of the Forerunners, past the Halos. Because we know there's the conflict of the Forerunners and the Flood. But I think for Halo... I take that back now that I'm thinking about it. Dang it! Because now I'm thinking, what if the Flood come to power again and we have to do the same thing that the Forerunners did? Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Kill all of us.
Why?
That would be the greatest ending to Halo 6 ever. Except they've already registered the domains just to Halo 7,
yeah,
8, and 9.
But just
I think.
Because they registered the domains doesn't...
Well, I'm just saying
what if
they,
we beat
they have
the
it
flood?
In the back of their mind.
What
I'm
if
not
we
saying
find
that
a way to
make
completely
it?
Eradicate them from the universe? Or, I mean, the galaxy.
I think you could make a new threat.
The return of the Forerunners.
That would be a good... That would be a good chance to make a brand new threat.
Didn't the
Forerunners
basically devolve us? So
yeah, they defeated humanity, and then
maybe in some other galaxy, the Forerunners, like some faction of the Forerunners, made it there, and they came back and they found that we're in control of everything. We've defeated the flood, and we're more a danger to ourselves and everyone else in the galaxy than they're willing to admit. And then they're our new foe, like actual living, breathing Forerunners.
They're like, bro,
yeah,
we devolved
exactly.
You for a reason. You got to go back.
So it's a wide open slate. Next one.
Ghost Chili says, hey, Podtac, Ghost Chili here. First off, just wanted to say, yes, I'm GT Ghost Chili on the forums. And yes, I do sell propane and propane experiences. No, not really, just a student. Anyway, I just wanted to ask you guys about how you think the Manus will affect game modes. Will it be used more for any personnel, any vehicle, or maybe a mix of both? I also wanted to ask you guys about the effective range of the Stomp, and wonder if you guys think it will be effective at all. The Stomp looks effective outside of the foot's range to make it more usable. I hope it's not like the Stomp from the Atlas in Mass Effect 3, which is unusable in my opinion. It doesn't seem very effective because I feel people won't just run up to it and bash it with a vehicle. I would enjoy using it to kill idiots who don't check their rear, which would be hard because it's so big and loud. Also, Brent brings up a good debate between the tank versus Manus. We all know from Halo 3 on the Ark that tank beats everything, from the Halo 3 Marine. What do you guys think, Manus or tank? I vote tank until a Marine says Manus beats everything. So say 100 tanks versus 100 Manuses. Who is the victor? I say when Halo 4 comes out, take an even amount of tanks and Manuses on either team and battle it out in one big team battle match. It might bog down because you probably can't spawn to many of either, or too many of either, or it might just not work out. Either way, what are your thoughts? Thanks for reading.
Let's see. What was his first question? Talking about the, I guess it, so talking about the Mantis pretty much here.
How will it
personnel,
affect game?
Anti-vehicle, maybe a mix of both. Definitely a mix of both. From the video that we saw that 343 released, mm-hmm. It definitely is a vehicle crusher and stomps other Spartans like flies, like a big giant fly swatter.
Well, I'm sure if you take that chain gun or missiles to a
oh, yeah,
Spartan,
it rips
it'll
through
also
them like
take
butter.
Them out pretty quick, too. Yeah, so, I mean, it's good on all fronts.
It's one big giant walking killing machine. It's just I want to know how it's balanced yes. out between the rest of the maps. And he makes a good point. Is tank effective at against it? Like how much does one tank shell take out of the Mantis's shields and or like invisible health that it has?
Well, in the Podtacular Forums thread where we talked about this and what he referenced earlier, I made the argument that the tank would win. If you would, as long as the tank was at a good distance from the Manus, because the shell would take out more damage than the Manus
right.
could even at distance. The Manus
the
isn't a
is.
Distance weapon, but the tank, you know, yeah. So, I mean, in that video, the Manus takes out mm-hmm. the tank, but it's standing right next to it.
Yeah, the Manus does seem more like a short mid-range vehicle. The tank yeah. is definitely long-range. Yes.
Mid to long range, yeah.
That's a good point. So it really depends on the situation, because you could walk up behind the tank and just crush it a few times and probably kill it. I wouldn't imagine one stomp of the Mantis would take out a full health tank. I would hope not.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
I would say that maybe you get stomped once, and then by the time that you realize you're being stomped and you try to get out, that the Mantis would be able to recover and stomp you a second time and kill you.
Well, to be honest, if the Mantis is right next to you, close enough to stomp the tank, they're probably just going to be firing missiles and chain gun. They're not going to be using that melee attack. To me, like, the melee attack is almost like a... It's almost purely like a mongoose and ghost killer, right? Like, if infantry are coming up on me, Yeah, maybe, because you don't want them to jump on you and hijack, so you might stomp. But even infantry, if I see them coming up, I want to keep them as far away as possible, so I'm just going to shoot them from range.
But say a tank is around one of those corners of a rock, and you come walking around. It's like, yeah, you'll start shooting it first with your chain gun and the missiles, but once you get close enough to it, you want to deliver a finishing blow. You're not just going to sit there and shoot more missiles and machine gun at it. It's going to take it out a lot slower when you might be able to just go up and stomp it and maybe just take it out right then and there.
Well, that's the question. What does more damage? The
shell.
Stomp attack or the missiles plus the chain gun at the same time? I mean, you've got two weapons firing on this thing at the same time, essentially.
Right.
So we have to see how much damage the stomp actually does before we'll know anything about that. You might be able to, like, run up. In my situation, if I were doing that, and I'd never played Halo 4 before, like, first time I get a Manus, and I'm that close to a tank, I'd probably, like, try and shoot it until I got up close, took its shields down, and then tried to do the stomp while it's kind of low on health.
All right. Last one for the night is from Tetrahedrite. He writes in, "Hey, Podtech, I just read the bulletin and 343 showcased the medals for the Flood game type. It's the first time 343 really broke down and showed off the new medals opposed to just talking about them at panels like PAX with CTF and those game type medals. The only thing left I'm still looking forward to information-wise before launch is an unveiling of the full list of multiplayer medals. I'm a huge sucker for trying out different game styles and using different weapons to earn every medal. My question for you guys are, 1. How big do you see the final medal chest? I think we'll be almost twice the size of Reach's. 2. Do you think with so many medals, some of them will become a little mundane since players are being rewarded for almost anything they do? Is there a risk of too many medals? 3. And 3. Are there any medals in particular you would like to see return in Halo 4 from past games, or any medals, serious or silly, you would want to be debuted in Halo 4? Thanks, guys. Love the show. Keep it going. Now back to Diablo, Pokemon, and Lost. 1. How big is the final medal chest? Big. Compared to Reach, it is huge. Freaking huge. You get medals
You're
for just about everything.
They might as well just give you a medal for sprinting. Like, every time you sprint, like, Usain Bolt!
Okay.
That was a Olympic reference.
Oh, got it. That's right. Okay. I would say, I mean, you said twice. I would say maybe even 3 or 4 times the size of Reach's. 2, do you think with so many medals, some are going to be mundane? Yeah, some of them are definitely going to be mundane. Like, You have the melee, you have the assassination, you have the headshot. All those are pretty much, you get those, you're definitely going to get some extra medals and points to it. I don't think that's a problem. I mean, they weren't a problem in Reach. You got extra experience for it, but I don't think it's any much of a problem.
I never even paid attention to them after a while. Like,
yeah.
You just get them and whatever.
And they really only contribute to your Spartan rank. I mean, they reward you for doing things that aren't just, I guess, super mundane by just, like, killing someone with an assault rifle or something like that. So I don't think there's a risk of getting too tired of the medals. Because after a while, you just don't... Yeah, they just pop up
care.
And you look for the medals that are really cool, like Yoink.
Or
Protector. Or
Extermination.
Yeah. Or Hell's Jerome.
Hell's
or Sunday
Driver.
So there's certain medals where they're just there. It doesn't really affect the gameplay too much. It doesn't really even matter to most people whether or not they're there. And then there's other ones you just, like, when you get them, you notice that they're there.
Yeah.
And no risk.
So no risk.
And 3, are there any medals in particular you would like to see? I mean, I think all the medals that we've seen in Halo 3 and Halo Reach are going to make a return to Halo 4, so I think that answers your question about that. But anything debuted, we've seen a lot of stuff already come into the game as it is already.
I've already said it before, and I mean, it's too late because Halo 4 is in the can now. They're not going to add any more medals or anything, but I want to see a Podtacular medal for calling in an ordnance drop on an enemy.
Ooh.
Just like hitting them. killing them with an ordnance drop. Podtacular.
That would be... I don't think it would necessarily be named Podtacular, but that would be an interesting
That's what I would call it.
Stat to do a metal four. You just dropped. All right, I guess that might sound a little boring. Drop it like it's hot.
Drop it like it's hot.
I don't know. I would almost say this one may be a little weird, but if you, like, say a weapon you spawn with, if you completely run out of ammo of both weapons.
Yeah. Get a medal for running out of ammo. Screwed over.
Or maybe you can have a medal that's like hoarder if you go through like five different weapons in one life. That might be something. I don't know, just
yeah.
It's just those little things where it'd be something cool to see. I can't really think of anything really silly that I would want to see in Halo 4 in terms of medals. That's not really already there. The medals for the most part are pretty serious. It's just the naming of them is just can be what funny, like Hell's Janitor.
Yeah.
Sunday Driver. Like yeah, the fun
That's
part
the fun
is just
part.
The naming of the medal. It's the fact that you're getting the stats to get that medal is makes sense, but it's just the silly part is just the name of the medal.
Like when you steal a kill, like yoink. Like,
yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
That's funny. That's fun.
Yes.
It's fun for everybody.
Other than that, though, I think just the medals that they have in there, that they have a lot, definitely. A lot of them are objective-based and kill-based. Like, I think there's a medal if you get... I mean, there's always been one for the Needler, the Super Combine. There's probably going to be some for Bomb.
Super Combination.
That they're gonna introduce some for Oddball, some for Capture the Flag. I think we'll be fine, though. No need to worry. Indeed.
Good to go.
Well, we've taken up a good chunk of your time, so we're going to go ahead and close out this show, unless you have any last remarks, Brent.
All right.
Nope. I'm still ready to use the Mantis.
Mantis is going to be awesome.
Want to blow somebody
and
up.
Then we have all the maps announced, so those are... Get familiar with them, people, because on November 6th, you're going to want to know what you're doing. At least map layout-wise. You might not know exactly where weapon spawns are, but have a good sense of direction on those maps, and you'll be good to go.
You'll get to spawn with
exactly.
One of your favorite weapons after a while.
So, thank you guys for listening. Make sure you tune into our Forward Unto Dawn podcast. Hopefully, it will not be as long as this, and we'll kind of keep it short, 30 minutes or so. If you're listening to this, Forward Unto Dawn is either coming out the day of or has already come out. So if you have not watched it, make sure you go watch it when it comes out or watch it now if it has come out already. There's going to be 5 of them released, the first one being October 5th, going to be released every Friday leading up to the release of Halo 4. And then if you have bought the limited edition, you will get the special extended version, which is it basically adds another 15 minutes, so another 6th episode of Forward Unto Dawn. So it's a full hour and a half movie, more or less, that you'll be able to watch. Again, if you have not ordered your limited edition, make sure you head on over to Amazon or any other retailer that has copies of it left. They're going out quickly, and I have a feeling they will be nearly sold out by the time the release comes around for Halo 4. So make sure you hop on that as quickly as possible. Also, if you're interested in doing the Halo Remix, make sure you check out Halo4Remix.com. Enter that contest. All the prize information is on the bulletin for this week. And there's some pretty good ones, so if you're into that stuff, make sure you check that out. Also, email us. Let us know that you're interested in doing that kind of thing. And any of the content that you make and you want to showcase on this show, let us know. Send us an email, submissions@podtacular.com, and we will premiere it as either an opening and or ending to a show. Also, make sure you check out podtacular.com. That is our main website where you can look up all of our past episodes and other news things we put up there. You can also check out our forums, which is...
Please check them out.
We have a lot of discussions about all the Halo 4 information that's coming out and that has been coming out. And there's other little side threads about other games and other things that are going on around the Halo community and gaming community at large. Also, you can send us any submissions, which can be questions, funny game moments that you've had in Reach, things that you're looking forward to in Halo 4, anything Halo-related. Feel free to send it to us at submissions@podtaggler.com, or from our homepage, you can click the big green button. Make sure you also check us out on iTunes and or Zune. You can also check us out on Facebook, which is podtaggler.com/Facebook, or which redirects to facebook.com/podtaggler. See what I did there? Haha. Haha. Actually, uh-huh. I'll that thing's in there. Maybe just do facebook.com/podtaggler to be safe. We're also at Twitter, twitter.com/podtaggler. And we also have YouTube videos that get released pretty much on a weekly basis, is kind of what I've been going for. Whenever 343 puts out a video, I try to do one right after the show where we talk about the content of that video. So you will probably see a video from us talking about the Mantis and one talking about some of the new maps that we've gotten this weekend. So you can check that out at youtube.com/podtacktv, or you can just do podtaggler.com/youtube. I know that one works. Voicemail, I'm not sure if we're going to bring that back because we normally would not get many. That's going to be something I put in the survey. So if you want that back, make sure you fill out the survey and put in the comment that, or fill out the option that you will want voicemail back. If you still want to send in an audio clip of some kind, you can also record yourself and send that in as an email as well. Keep it to a minute and a half to 2 minutes long. If you guys feel like donating, we appreciate any and all donations you guys send our way. We have a donate button on our homepage that you can use. If you feel like you want to contribute, we'd be very grateful for your support. And on the new forms, you'll get a nice little badge that says you're a supporter of Podtaggler. Thanks again for listening, guys. And until our Forge into Dawn episode, keep it real. And keep it fragging trucks.
On fragging mechs.